Yeah, that's what I like to call those classic Alien 101 stories. You're like, well, really, were you watching X-Files before you called me?
You saw Aliens.
Another good litmus test that I like to use as an investigator is ask a lot of questions. He'll make up some questions that, you know, even you can't come up with a conceivable answer for. And if the person you're interviewing has that answer, you know, they have a solid, you know, this is my word and I'm sticking to an answer for each and every single question that you have, then you know they're making at least some of it up, so you can't really trust any of it now, can you?
Yeah, you can. Because really, you really can. I mean, you know, when you do this, a lot of this research...
You know, wait. I have to back up and make an addendum to that last statement. Is, you know, just because there are a couple of points in somebody's story that just don't sit right with you or you have a huge problem with it, doesn't mean you have to throw away their entire tale. Because more often than not, if you sit these people out and listen to their entire story, you'll find that they contain a lot of consistent elements. So, you know, then you're left wondering, it's like, you know, okay, how much of this person's tale is compatible with, you know, what my working model of things are? You know, and who knows? I mean, a lot of people like that, you talk to enough of them, and they might change your perspective on the topic. I mean, who knows?
That's true. I mean, we've changed our mind over the years over different stuff. I mean... Every now and then somebody will write to me, well, that's not what you said 10 years ago. I said, yeah, but did you listen to why we changed? And they're like, well, no. I'm like, no, we always give you an explanation when we change anything. And, you know, it's like the abduction thing when we used to think it was a third. Now we know it's more grays and less reptilians and humans. That's only because of research. And it's only because now we have more research than we did then.
That's one of those things that's evolving, too, is the number of reptilian contacts that have decided to come forth with their experiences. I mean, in the last 5 or 6 years, I'd have to say it's doubled, maybe even tripled.
Oh, yeah, easily, to what it used to be. I mean, in the old days, we got, you know, 1, 2, maybe 5 every few months. We're coming out, they're coming out of the woodwork. And I do think it's because we've made it easier, and we're not saying that the reptilians are all here to eat us and kill us and turn us into lunch.
And you know, you start to notice a few quirks, you know, in the reptilian contact versus the gray contact. From what I've noticed, it seems like the grays are more likely to just keep these events completely and totally hidden from you and don't offer up very much, if any, information at all in some cases. You know, that eventually evolves over time. But in the case of reptilians, I get the sense that they let their experiencers remember a little bit more. And, you know, from a few reptilian contactees that I consider credible, I get the sense that they know more than they're being allowed to tell. If that makes sense.
Now, here's an interesting email I got. This, I'm not going to say the person's name, it would be nice, but it says... Joe, are you really interested in aliens? I'm just wondering. Okay, I'm going to answer this the easy way. Type in Joe Montaldo. You can just type in Montaldo if you want, anywhere on the internet. Then write back and ask me that question. I'm sorry, I can't help it. If you didn't type in my name, I mean, come on, I am, as a ufologist goes, I am easily searched. I'm freaking everywhere on the internet. I mean, it's just everywhere. So it just tells me, see, this is what I talk about when people don't do their homework. But I like picking on people because every now and then somebody will write to me and says, do you really do alien research or do you have any interest in extraterrestrials? And I'm thinking, no, not me. That's somebody else. That's that Joe Renard guy. He does, not me. I can't help. Wait, somebody just called in. Hold on. I apologize. I have my finger on the thing. They wanted to know what's the biggest Texas UFO sighting? The hell, I don't know. Texas Airship?
Yeah, I'd have to say that probably the biggest historical...
Airship?
the only
airship I can think of would be that one in Aurora, Texas that happened, what, in the late 1800s?
They were asking what the biggest sighting was in Texas. Could it be Stevensville? I mean, I don't know.
Stephenville is definitely, I'd have to say that's probably one of the biggest modern cases around there. I mean,
well, you can talk about, you know, modern cases. What about the Lubbock Lights? Back in, what, the
well, yeah, Lubbock Lights and, you know, their activity reported out around Marfa.
Everyone always forgets about the Lubbock Lights.
Couple of big cases that came out of there, too, back in the 70s, I believe.
It's a damn big-ass state, so I forgot all about the Lubbock Lights. Shame on me, man. That might be the most popular one out the bunch. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of damn reports. Isn't that the way I used to go sit and watch them every night in the car lights? Because I haven't heard anything about it anymore.
It went on for several days. Thousands of people all over the area saw it.
Yeah, that's got to be
most the biggest. Well, now our parents and grandparents.
Yeah, so technically, yeah, I can see that's the big one. Jason's a ladies' man. Jason, are you a ladies' man? I just got an IM that said that, by the way. I'm not reading no IMs tonight.
I'm going to go mute for a couple of minutes.
If y'all want to go hang out, you can come back and join us later. Go on. We got you here when you're ready. Come back. Just let me know. Hit me with an IM or something. Let me know if you're back.
All right, man. I'll be back here soon.
All right. Catch you in a minute.
All right.
That was Joe Winard, guys. He's our Texas State Director. Jason's his boss. You know, look, that's Jason, man. You got to talk to Jason. Jason's like, man, how you put that off of me like that? Where the hell was I? I keep getting distracted. I hate when I get like this. Anyway, let's see. Got all kind of questions floating all over the place here. Let's see. Let's go over to this computer. All right. You know, I know a lot of people write in about the human aliens, and I get a lot of complaints, actually, that we do more research on the Greys and reptilians. That's not true. We do as much research on the human aliens. It's just y'all don't like what we have to say about the human aliens, so we don't talk about it with you. People get really mad at me when I tell them that, you know, human aliens aren't all peace, love, and light, and they're not all here to save us, and they're not all beautiful, angelic-like, because they're not.
I know I've come across a consistent number of cases where people that have had experiences with, you know, a very humanoid type of alien. I mean, yeah, of course there's a lot of, Space Brothers, Ashtar, Commander, you know, we're here to bring you intergalactic love or some crap like that cases out there. But you also come across a disturbing number of other cases where people have interacted with a humanoid type alien and it was completely negative. I mean, they're like some of the only times you ever hear anybody reporting that they were treated with a complete and total, like, unrespectful, condescending attitude. I mean, there seems to be a lot of the people that report these humanoid types, they seem to think that these types of extraterrestrials are, well, I almost hate to say it, but I think that, you know, these types of beings do tend to interfere in the individual's, you know, life here on Earth in more ways than any of the other type beings do. I mean, especially in a lot of the relationship type of manipulation that Eve Morgan has written about extensively. I don't know. I don't trust these guys. I mean, it seems like a lot of other contactees that have had firsthand dealings with them, too, more or less share the same sentiments.
And they do. It's just, you know, when it comes to the human aliens, because, you know, the first exposure I had to human aliens was probably about 23, 24 years ago, and it was Billy Meyer, by the way. And then after that, it was a lot more of the Palladian stuff and things like that. And, guys, I'm not picking on Palladians because I don't know, you know, what in theirs is not. I just, you know, first off, I have problems with the aliens call their home star system Palladian, since that's a human Earth name, but... and since telepathically, I'm still kind of wondering how they actually got that name. But we'll let all that slide. You know, we'll let it slide. But we're evidence based organization. So what we do is we go by the caseload we have coming in. That's why we tell people that it's not that aliens are good, bad, or anything else. They're extraterrestrials. They think differently than we do. They act differently than we do. It's just, you know, part of it. That's how it goes. So we're not actually even putting any things on them, but. If you go by the evidence, humans can be quite vicious sometimes. They're being quite mean. They can interfere in a lot of damn ways. You know, the Egyptians talk about them. The Sumerians talk about them. The Dogon talk about them. A lot of people talk about them. They're pretty much all over history. But they're not described as big, beautiful, flowing angels. I mean, they have long hair and short hair and stuff like that. But their heads are much... They have different eye colors than we do, and their heads are much different than ours. The Naskins used to board their children to make them look like that. See, this is another thing that ICAR actually changed, by the way. In the old days, when we talked about the Naskins, we used to think the Naskins were boarding their heads that looked like these because they were big, you know, heads. But then we'd seen the shape of the children's head. It was shaped more like the alien from the movie Alien. Well, that's what the Egyptians said the aliens looked like. And come to find out, the pharaohs had some weird disease that gave them that shaped head. Yeah, that was kind of strange in itself. But a lot of the contactees we talked to now say, yeah, their face is kind of like ours, bigger. Their eye color and eye shapes are a little different. But their head is like, you know, 18 inches, maybe 20 inches deep. So it's not shaped like that. So obviously when you walk up one, you're going to know it's obviously not a human from Earth. You might call it a human, but you're not going to call it from human first. And most of them say they have six fingers and six toes. But none of them tell you that they're overflowingly beautiful. As a matter of fact, about 95% of the hypnosis I've seen, not done just by us, but other organizations, when they hypnotize somebody for one of these angelic-like beings, you know, these beautiful, overflowing, just gorgeous, like, oh, beings, no, it's not the light being. It turns out to be the reptilians. Yeah, and we got lots of cases like that. Matter of fact, well, I can't say that because she'll get mad. I was going to cite one of our directors. Never mind. I forgot. No, they ain't made it public yet, so I don't want to get in trouble. But still, I mean, we've got a lot of cases like that, and it's a very strange thing in itself. But yeah, I mean, they can be mean, they can be nice, they can be just like the Greys or the reptilians. They've got their good days, their bad days, and their different days. But I think where humans really make the biggest mistake at is when they think this is all about us. I think that's truly where they make their biggest mistake, because it's not all about us.
Yeah, I'd have to say that's pretty true. And you know, with all three of the major races that visit people, I just have to say, everybody keep one thing in mind before you decide that whoever's dealing with you is completely and totally benevolent and loves you, and you just feel like you love them and trust them, and it's something you know in your heart of hearts and stuff like that. Remember that all three of these beings, they lie to you and they deceive you. I mean, even people that think that they recall every single bit that's ever happened to them and that their aliens love them and let them remember everything, question them a little bit further, you'll find out that that's definitely not the case. I mean, there are also events that, you know, they'll notice that some of their events seem contrary to one another. And then again, they also remember a lot of missing cover memory type experiences where they're not sure what happened to. So just remember, don't take everything at face value with this.
No, please don't. Kim wrote in from Seattle and said, God, I can tell Joe and Jason's been talking together a long time. Yeah, Jason knows if he's going to say something, he's just got to say it. If you're not, you're never going to get a word in edgewise. It's just one of those things. Now, somebody had asked me yesterday, and I definitely want to bring this up. Somebody was asking me about the reptilians and are they vicious like everybody says, or like David Jacobs said, here to eat us and to do things and nasty things with us. I'll tell you a little secret. The reptilians seem to be an agrarian society, or agrarian might not quite fit them. In general, you leave them alone, they're going to leave you alone. They're just doing their experiments because they have to do whatever that is that they're doing here for whatever reason they're doing it. Probably something to do with the humans, but you know they're doing this. But yes, there are a lot of cases where they seem to become infatuated with humans, and not just females, but males as well. It's a very interesting thing. When you look at this, because you know they're five-fingered, five-toed, you know, probably around 7 foot tall, you know, the 3, 4, 5 in a range, depending on how old they are. But the thing about it is in a lot of ways, at all species we talk to, they're the closest like us in behavior and the way we act.
That is a good point. I mean, you almost get the impression from, you know, some of the experiences recalled by reptilian techies that you can almost understand where the reptilians are coming from. I mean, and the way that they treat some people and some of the things they do, it's almost like, I mean, they genuinely are. It's almost like they're the two. I mean, they and us. I mean, we can almost understand each other and sort of be on the same level in some way. I don't know. It's just kind of weird the way that works out.
It is, but it does seem to be like that, and they seem, you know. But a lot of people think they are from here, so that would explain a lot.
I mean, I didn't really fully make my point earlier. I was having, you know, a problem digging it out of the back of my head, but I guess what I was trying to say is, you know, they seem to understand emotions a little bit better, and, you know, they definitely seem to use them and apply mean, if it's if they're using it as a tool to gain compliance from us, you know, either through, you know, positive feedback or negative feedback. I mean, you do hear from some pretty nasty, nightmare-sounding rep cases, but, I mean, it really sounds like they, you know, can, I mean, they, as far as the emotionless aliens thing, I mean, no, they definitely understand our emotions and even seem to use them as tools many times.
Yeah, they use them against us, that's for sure. They definitely have the ability to do that. They manipulate us. An answer to Bruce's question is, yeah, they genetic memory is a thing that we picked up. We have these contactees, these reptilian contactees especially, that have lifetimes in their heads. Well, not most of them aren't even old enough to experience any of this. These are literally lifetimes of information in worlds far from this one. Contactees had started, you know, reptilians had started talking with the contactees about genetic memory and bringing them to what they call the Great Library or some library. I've heard three different descriptions of this library, by the way. One was underwater with a big orb around it. Right in the center of it was an orb. When you put your hand on the orb, whatever you thought about would appear. It would be not like a hologram, but like it would fill the globe. It's hard to explain. Another one was similar to that, but it was above ground. And then they talk about another one on a world that's more, I would say it's drier. It's not that much dry because everything looks like it's built out of mud huts. It's like mud huts with, you know, 3,000-year advanced technology in it. It's really strange. But the commonality in all three of them is the center orb thing, where you put your hand and it's like you communicate with the library. And they talk about that. As they said, it also helps you to release the genetic memories locked in the head. So a lot of times when you get a reptilian contactee in regression, one of these lifetimes from somebody else will come out. And what's interesting is when you get them to start talking, you can tell, because they're not experiencing the emotion, but they're seeing it like they're looking through someone else's eyes.
You know, Joe, sometimes, I mean, that same concept can manifest itself in, you know, a number of ways through eyes and the creative interpretation of the contact. I mean, you know, something with, you know, an orb or a portal in some type of city, a lot of people describe a similar experience where it's something like an information kiosk or a computer terminal, or, you know, something like that, but you know, in the end result, it's, you know, throw away the minor garnish and details, you're getting more or less the same type of experience.
To answer the Ozzy's question that came in earlier, yes, Russell Crowe did come out and said he believes UFOs are real. He definitely did.
I had just come across that, and I was like, oh, really? No way? And turns out that, yeah, he uploaded a little video of it to YouTube and everything.
Yeah, and
I was kind of afraid for the aliens. I was like, oh, damn, they met Russell Crowe. I mean, I hope he wasn't tipsy because he might have just beat their ass.
I know. Well, he said he's been giving his critics a hard time about it. I've seen a couple articles about it now, and they say he's been giving his critics a hard time. He said, Lord, it's a UFO. What the hell? Now you know how we feel. Russell, join the club, baby. Most of y'all Australians are contactees anyway. You just don't know it yet, so don't worry about it. I can just see, what was her name? What was it, blonde from Greece, Olivia Newton-John? I can just see her dancing around on the mothership singing right now. Lord, have mercy on all of us.
But, you know, honestly, the first thing that, like, rolled through my head when I heard about Russell seeing a UFO was that South Park episode where they do that Russell Crowe fighting around the world scene.
I know, huh? Shit. I can just see it. Hey, maybe he'll go box with one of the reptilians. It might have been a reptilian one, you know. I could see him up there, you know. Let's Russell Crowe and the reptilian. Russell, baby, don't take this the wrong way, but I think you better grow a little bit of stuff.
I don't know, dude. I don't know. I don't know, man. If anybody from Hollywood especially could do it, it would be Russell Crowe.
Oh, Jennifer, to answer your question, what do you mean, how do we know who's an abductee and who's a contactee? I'm not sure. I don't exactly, because they've been contacted by aliens, that's how we know. How do we know that they've been contacted by aliens? Okay, what you're asking basically is, how do we know if the person's telling the truth, is what you're asking, right? How do we know if they've been contacted by extraterrestrials? Well, thank God for comparison studies. We were talking about this earlier in the show. If it wouldn't be for them, we wouldn't know. It's in other words, let's say Jane Smith comes up and she says, I was abducted by a reptilian, and she goes into the spiel and she tells me all of this. And I'm sitting there, Jason's sitting there, we're listening for keywords. Okay, we're not. The first time we talk to somebody, we're not even listening to the story. We're listening for keyword. We want to see if we should take the time to actually do an investigation on this, because what happens is, in all abductions, there are similarities in all abductions, like the type of craft you're on, or the type of alien that picks you up, or procedures that are done to you. It's, you know, it's even, you know, and I think the peace, love, and light is forget this sometimes, but even if the aliens are here to love us and kiss us and hug us, when they bring you on board a craft, each time you're going to be brought there in the same fashion, or mostly the same fashion, you know, beamed up, shuttled up, whatever, brought to this area, moved to here, moved there on that particular ship. So there's going to be similarities in contactee stories. So that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the stuff that ties them all together. But more importantly, what you're looking for is the stuff that has not been made public yet. So if you're only hearing things that you can find in TV or internet, you know they're not telling you the truth. Okay, so there's no reason to even go any further than that.
Here's one of the ways I do it. All right, you know, get to their particular experiences, and we start dissecting the details or looking for anything in that. First thing you have to do is you have to assess the person, and one way to do it is you have to look at it from one point of view first. And this is just one way to do it. But all right, look at it from this point of view. There's nobody out there that has come to the decision that they've had dealings with extraterrestrials lightly. First off, you have to, you know, take that into consideration. And anybody that sounds like they're not, I mean, you can tell if somebody's just BSing you for fun to see if they're making something up. I don't even have to go into that. That's just common sense. You can't figure that out, you know, being in another field. But, you know, once somebody comes to you and says, yes, seriously, I am a contactee, here's what's happened to me, you have to take a look at who they are, what their particular experience is, and look at it from, you know, either one of three ways. Either one, this person is convinced that they're having extraterrestrial encounters because nothing else can explain it. Either two, this person may possibly be, you know, using the extraterrestrial experience as a cover story for something traumatic that might have happened in the past. That does happen from time to time, and, oh man, it's actually kind of sad when you come across, you know, where that may be going on. And the third one is there are a lot of people out there who believe in their own little escapist, make-believe UFO world. For whatever reasons, they're not happy here on this planet. So in their mind, they've got an entire fantasy life that is just completely and totally awesome. And if they had the choice, they would go live there and never ever come back here again. You know, you just basically have to listen to a person and, you know, yes, there is some judgment involved in it. I mean, I'm sorry. I think that if you're in this field and you're one of those people who absolutely believes everything without questioning, then, well, you're kind of useless as a researcher, in my opinion.
Well, and there's a lot of that. Unfortunately, people, they listen. It always cracked me up on how many people listen to one contactee and then write a book. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Now, granted, I coached a work book a long time ago, which is it's kind of a hard thing for us to do because we really ain't got any writers in the organization. But, you know, if you're gonna write a book, I mean, write all my information. Right now, we've got more information than anybody in the field. I don't care who it is. You can take all John Max and David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and everybody else's work that's still abduction and combined together, and they still ain't even got 20% of what we have in the field. It's just the comparison studies in the last 3 years is more information than any of them contain.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to let you finish, but I'm going to have to tell you that your voice is coming through a little bit garbled. Everybody in
car. Hold on, man.
And you do hear just on Skype, too, so.
Yeah, hold on. Let's see if we can correct that. Well.
Hey, you still there, man?
Yeah, hold on. I was trying to get the ping so it would knock it out. It's really weird nights tonight for some reason.
Oh, no, you still sound kind of like a robot.
Hold on. Five, four, three, two.
I think it's still messed up.
Okay, how about that? Is it any better?
Yep, still sucks.
Hold on, let me do this old fashioned way here.
Be one of them kind of nights. Hey, y'all out there, can y'all hear us any better? Oh, we're calling Joe back by accident.
All right, that sounds a little better.
They, there we go. Yeah, I just cleared it out. I must have got, sometimes it gets, Skype gets, I don't know, something built up in it. It's kind of a weird kind of thing in itself, the way it does it. But anyway, what were we talking about before we had to go rebooting the thing?
I don't know, that kind of derailed me.
They, what were we talking about, guys, in the Virtual Auditorium? I know y'all were paying attention, half of y'all, anyway.
Somebody was paying attention.
Well, they, it's, I don't know what the hell that was about. That was just kind of weird, but still, every now and then it does it, so I ain't going to lose any sleep over it. Who's that calling? Oh, I lost it. Damn. Oh, well, hopefully it'll call back. No one paying attention to that, guys. The thing, when it comes to the different types of aliens and what we talk about when we're talking about greys, reptilians, and humans, and comparison studies and things like that, really, I mean, we want to hear your keyword. When you, because that's what we're talking about. Yeah, you call in. It's 504-273-7379. Sorry. 504-273-7379. Yeah, sorry, guys. My brain is fried tonight for some reason. But really, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about comparison studies, and we're looking for keywords. Because really, you know, like the blue plasma thing.
You even get to that point, I mean, you have to sort of take a look at the person's lifetime experience, too. Because one of the most consistent things I've noted with people that, I mean, this is usually a lifetime thing. There's a pattern of activity that occurs during childhood. There is a pattern of activity that changes during adolescence. And then once somebody gets into adulthood, I mean, it seems like the experience changes again. I mean, looking for larger patterns like that, because, I mean, honestly, Travis Walton, I tend to believe Travis. What he says happened to him, I believe that's what he remembers happened to him.
I do, too.
I mean, but it's really rare for, you know, a one-time-only abduction case like that to happen. I mean, typically there's a lifetime of activity, and like I said, there are repeatable, you know, identifiable patterns that happen during each phase of a contactee's life, and you know, that's definitely one of the things you have to look for too.
And you do, you have to look for them. I mean, it guys, all of this information adds up to find out who's a contactee, who's not a contactee. You know, what do we consider a contactee to be? What do we consider an abductee to be? What do we consider a keeper to be? It's not cut and dry. You know, people write into us all the time.
When you get into that too, Joe, you're kind of sort of minting terminology.
Yeah, you are.
It's not really set in stone. I mean, you're not going to be able to look it up in Merriam-Webster's and, you know, be able to find these definitions as they relate to ufology. But generally, this is how I look at it. If you're an abductee, that means that extraterrestrials are getting you, and you're either not well aware of it yet, you become a contactee when you become aware of it, and, you know, even some level of two-way communication happens between you and them. This is where the awareness phase begins. And when you become a keeper, I guess you could say that's when you become a more experienced contactee, and you're able to recall more of what's happening, and I guess you could say you're even sort of going along with this and, you know, participating in the experience in some way. I mean, if you just want to look at it in its most basic terms, it's just, you know, I guess your levels of immersion and awareness in the field.
It is. You got to pay attention. You got to get all your facts together, and you got to really, really, really listen. I got to tell you this. If you're ever going to get involved with abduction research, you got to have attention to detail, and you have to not mind being able to sit and listen for long periods of time. Because really and truly, you do a lot of that, just listening to people, or a lot of reading, or a lot of listening. It depends. I prefer to hear somebody's voice when they're telling me something. I don't like to read it in text, because I don't feel like text gives me the emotions or the impact of what the person's going through. A lot of times people have a hard time, you know, portraying the actual emotions in text. But on the phone, when you start asking questions, that helps a lot too, because a lot of times you can tell right off the bat when you're talking to somebody if they're lying or telling the truth, because this is a very, very emotional thing. I mean, it's something that whether good, bad, or indifferent, it is something that is deep in you. I mean, it's a big part of who you are, and it shows in the right questions. It'll come out. You can actually sense it in an individual when they're talking about it. Channeling aliens. I don't know. I'm very skeptical about channeling aliens, because why not just go to the source? I mean, we have contactees that talk to aliens every day, so why not go to the source? I wouldn't know why any ET would want to be channeled, is what I'm saying, when they could just tell the contactee what they want to tell them. So I've always been real skeptical about channelers. I've had a couple on the show, by the way. I mean, not that I haven't given their chances. I've had a couple on the show. And Laura Yachik was pretty good, but Laura and I found out that it wasn't so much channeling as it was telepathic contact, which is a different thing. But, you know, it's one of them things. But people label terms. I mean, I don't know. If the person may be a contactee and not know it, and may be talking with their gray or the reptilian or human on a regular basis, and they just not know it. So that's why I never put channelers off, because I always want to talk to them, because they may be a contactee. And that's the reason they feel like they're channeling. They're not actually channeling. They're talking to their damn extraterrestrial, and he's telling them, hey, Gene, you know what? Look, this is what happened yesterday, or this is what we want you to do, or something along those lines. So you know, but I'm always open to everything, and, you know, I got a lot to give me hell, because they're very, very new age, peace, love, and light is what I call them, and they're good friends of mine. And I have no problem with people wanting to raise their spiritual awareness or you know, help to learn how to heal or do things like that. Nah, that's a good thing. I have no problems with that. I just got problems when you're going to give me one label for an alien and tell me that's how it is and he's here to
look, man, I basically just kind of have a problem with anybody who tries to say with any level of authority that they know what aliens believe in and what aliens happen to feel and what their spiritual beliefs are and what we should be doing to better ourselves. When it just so happens that without fail, 100% of the time, these space brother aliens happen to believe in the exact same crap that the people who claim to see them believe. I mean, come on, man. I mean, who believes in aliens that tell you everything you want to hear?
And see, that's another problem.
Anybody tells them exactly what they want to hear.
Well, and see, that's another problem, because you get a lot of that, you know. It's
Democrats do it every day, so
that, yeah, well, that's true, too, but, you know, we'll leave that alone. We've got that Saturday night for that kind of stuff, but, oh, man, I got to tell y'all, too, this Saturday on News and the Flipside, they got a lot of good news for this Saturday show, man.
Oh, man.
God,
saying, why, yes, Obama can kill Americans.
Oh, God, yes, we're going to talk about that.
Oh, man, that's... Ooh,
we've got
the hope and change y'all voted for?
I know we're gonna get into some in depth stuff, and you know how y'all I've been telling everybody I've been fighting with Reuters about the actual approval ratings that he's got. Well, guess what Reuters posted today? If you go over to News on the Flip Side, you'll notice that do you think he's done a good job, bad job? And it's 43% say no. Reuters today posted he's got a 43% approval rating. So just a month ago he had a 51, but now he's got a 43.
Well, see, everything's kind of cut and dry. You see, I want to try to like Obama, right? Okay, because it's like, all right, the White House just saw those petitions that like 140-something people signed, 140-something thousand people signed, I think. I could be wrong about the number, but they're like, dear Obama, we think it's wrong that the FCC said we can't unlock our phones so we can use them on a different carrier when our contract is up. And they basically said, yeah, well, tough, we're going to listen to the industry lobbyists on that one. Well, the White House responded, and guess what? You're going to be able to unlock your phone and take it to any carrier that you want to now. I'm like, way to go, Obama. Way to go. You know, I'll give you your kudos for that one.
Yeah, me too.
Well done. Then the very next day, you know, there's that letter from Attorney General Holder that's like, oh, hell yeah, we can kill Americans on our own soil with no trial or anything. And it's like, man, Obama, I try to like you, but you make it so damn hard.
It is. But anyway, we're going to leave that for Saturday night, guys. Anyway, News on the Flip Side, Saturday night, Stephanie Medetti, Joe Montalvo, y'all come check it out. Church of Mavis follows, Voice of the People's in front of us. There won't be no voice this week because Greg's recovering from his heart attack, but on that. But really, UFO Undercover, we do stick pretty much to UFOs and not to politics. It's hard some nights because they overlap a lot in a lot of areas. You know, when you get into politics and ufology, I mean, there's a lot of overlapping. You know, government's definitely keeping secrets. There's never been a president alive that didn't keep secrets on this. Or if they didn't knowingly did it, you know, they still kept a secret. Knowingly or not knowingly, as president, they kept a secret. There's never been any orders from any president anywhere to make this stuff declassified. You know, somebody asked Jimmy Carter, well, not Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, to declassify any records on ufology, and Bill looked into it in his first term, and never one time ordered any records to be declassified. Neither did Bush, neither did Reagan, neither did Carter, none of them. Neither did Obama, none of the presidents did it. So in this one thing, for sure, the American presidents are united. I got to tell y'all, that scares the living crap out of me, okay?
Well, point of view, man. I mean, in today's political climate, it would be complete and utter suicide to, you know, make any kind of semi-official reference to the whole alien thing. I mean, come on, man. You know exactly how it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, look what happened. What's his name?
NBC wouldn't shut up about it for 2 weeks, and if a Democrat did it, neither would the people on Fox.
Oh, no. Well, what's his name? Who was the one that was running for president?
Dennis
Shirley McLean. Yeah, it was his friend. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Shirley McLean is Dennis Kucinich's friend. Now he's this crazy, wacky UFO nut job, and that's basically the only press that Kucinich ever got. You know, if I was a Democrat and had to vote Democrat, I probably would have voted for Kucinich because, you know, I kind of like the guy.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. But that's you know, what can you do? No president wants to make this a declassified. Whatever they're keeping a secret. And it's irritating because I'd like to see one of them do it. And it is funny because, you know, I don't want to hate on any one president on this, because I have heard at least three presidents say, let's see, Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., and Obama all said they would make this public. Of course they didn't. And this isn't to hate on a president, by the way. This is what happened. You know, the second term, they go in for the meeting, and some guy comes in smoking a cigar and says, you know what, aliens are real. And they're like, oh, you're screwing with me, man. No, they're not. Oh, yes, dude, they really are real. And guess what? You're going to have to keep it a secret. And if you don't, Mr. Alien's going to come pay you a little visit. And, of course, they introduce him one time, and that's it. That president is like, yes, sir, whatever the hell you say. And that's just the end of it. And whether that really happens or not, I don't know. But still, something shuts them up. Clinton shut up. Bush shut up, Carter shut up, and Obama shut up. So something, once they become their second term, they're told something that they don't want the American public knowing.
You know, Joe, if you look at it from this point of view, too, disclosure just kind of goes against all the concepts that government wants us to think about them. I mean, what do our world governments, I mean, you know, everybody's, you know, country's government, the UN, they all think that they are the ones, they are the supreme say-all, end-all, be-all of authority. They are the law, they make the laws, they write the laws. There is no anything out of their jurisdiction. Well, guess what? If aliens exist, they are out of their jurisdiction. All of a sudden, the UN or the United States government or whoever you think runs things isn't quite the puppet master anymore. I mean, there are things out there out of their control, and they simply don't want to give anybody that impression, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I think it's one of those things that they're just going to keep secret, whatever it is. They're not going to tell us anything.
Oh, yeah, God. Steve had a good point. Politics, religion, and UFO investigation really do not mix.
No, they never have, and it is something we pride ourselves on generally keeping apart, but there are crossovers. I mean, there are certain religious stuff that cross over, and there's certain, you know, government stuff that cross over. But
I mean, the field of exopolitics, snicker, snicker, I mean, they pretty much are the mixing pool between government and extraterrestrials. Right?
They really are. Yeah, and that's, you know, see, everybody's got their niche. MUFON investigates UFOs, and that's what they should stick to, because they suck at abduction investigations. So they should stick to UFO stuff. Exopolitics, they stick to the politics of ufology, which is great. That means I can keep my hands clean and I don't have to get into that stuff, which means we can stick to abduction research. It works out really well. And it also keeps a lot less infighting inside the different organizations in abduction research, because we're all working for a specific goal. Why the hell are the aliens here, and why are they taking our citizens? But in ufology, which is different, it's a much different thing. They're all competing theories on different stuff, on, you know, this conspiracy or that conspiracy or that conspiracy or this conspiracy. And I've said this to every prominent ufologist alive. You will never find the truth chasing lights in the sky. Plain and simple. You want the truth, you're either going to get it from the government or you're going to get it from ET, which you have to go through to contact these to do.
I don't think the government's ever going to come clean with what they know. And who knows how much they actually know?
I don't think they know near as much as people give them credit for, to be honest with you.
I mean, they take a look at all the MILAB stuff. I mean, the government obviously doesn't know everything, because I believe that in a lot of cases they're trying to look over the shoulders of contactees to figure out what's happening to them.
It's, you know, and it is why that the government does. Oh, it's not the government. I hate using that government word or the military word. There's a group out there that takes people, and they're looking for the answer, just like we're looking for the answer. Why is ET here? What is ET up to? Why does ET take our citizens? And, you know, why do these citizens have, you know, better telepathic, better empathic abilities? It's like the very first time I ever reviewed a remote viewer, and I started laughing. And he was like, why are you laughing? I said, well, remote viewing sucks. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, I asked you, can you read something on someone's desk? Can you pick up the file? Well, they can remote view the room, but they can't read the file. Well, a good telepath can get into someone's head and actually eyes and actually read whatever they're reading. So why in the hell would you want a remote viewer when you could use a telepath? Well, as we all know, the government got rid of the remote viewing program, and what was it, in the 90s or maybe the first part of 2000s, the Navy and Air Force instituted the telepath program. Oh, they got smart, didn't they? Probably from taking MILAM or contactees or abductees, they probably worked it out. Remote viewers are cool for finding, like, missiles, but if you want to know the launch code to the missile, you need a telepath. Now, I know what the government really wants. They could give a crap about either one of them. What the government really wants is, not clairvoyance, telekinesis. That's what they really want. They want somebody that has the ability to, like, squeeze a blood vessel, say, in Putin's head. So it looks like he had an aneurysm.
Joe's been watching Babylon 5 again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but that's what the government's after. I wish I was watching. I hadn't seen B5 in a while, but that's what the government's after. That's the kind of technology they're looking for. And they're also looking for what types of technology they're looking for. But apparently, we haven't quite figured it out yet, because I don't see where Alita's dropping dead all over. Because trust me, Kim Jong, we would have took care of him. The guy in Iran, he'd be dead. Chavez would have been dead a long time ago. So would have Khrushchev. So apparently, we haven't quite got to that level of concentration yet. That's why when I hear all these conspiracies, like in peace, people that tell me that they're fighting these super soldiers and they're using their telepathic abilities to destroy this and destroy that and do this and do that, and they're using their abilities to interrogate greys and reptilians. When they said that, I like to fell out of my damn chair laughing, by the way. I'm thinking, really? Then why don't you kill you, Chavez? Why don't you kill Castro? Why don't you take out Stalin? What the hell? Don't lie to me, because we had that kind of technology. We would have used it a long frickin' time ago.
It is an interesting point.
You know, so we don't yet, you know, so yeah, that's what gets me with people. They're always like, oh, no, we do. No, if we did, we would use it. Yes. And don't you bullshit on me, because nukes you have to show. I mean, come on. You drop a nuke on somebody, you just kill 5 million people, man. A little telekinesis, you kill one person. It's a little kind of a different thing there. Let's not compare apples and oranges here. Oh, my God.
Then again, you'd think that if they had more stuff like this, you would see more mysterious death. Oh, come on. And don't get started on me, conspiracy people. I know y'all have your, like, big cases and whatnot, but, I mean, you'd be seeing this happen all the time. Oh, but the media, the government controls the media, so you'd never hear about it anyway. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're going to get all kind of emails over this show tonight. But really, guys, think about it. Use logic. I tell this to contactees, too, because they, you know, sometimes this shit's overwhelming, and it takes control of you. And I say, you got to stop and use logic from time to time. When you're thinking about what's going on with you and what's happening to you, don't just get caught up in the scenario. Stop and think, is this really real? Because remember, a good part of abductions is in the eye of the beholder. You know, the ET's telling you stuff and showing you stuff telepathically. They're changing your memories to help you to forget stuff. So this is all in the eye of the beholder. A lot of this is created by the contactee. A lot of it's just not real. You know, it's just one of those things. It's manufactured by your own mind to keep your sanity. These big, elaborate stories a lot of times are just that. Now, by saying that, I don't want to think, all contactees, it's not what's going on here. Sometimes it's just, you know, sometimes, especially if you're a MILAM and an abductee, sometimes you'll end up with three sets of memories in your head. It's going to get a little confusing. And then, I've said this 100 times. Let's say you're sitting there talking to a human alien. He's telepathic. He puts an image in your head of a saucer and a cup and something in the cup. What the hell is he trying to tell you? Would you like a cup of tea? Is the cup half full, half empty? Is it half a cup? Are we talking about the saucer? What the hell are we talking about here? Somewhere in there, you've got to make a leap of faith and make a judgment call. And this is what happens to contactees. This is why, until you spend lots of time so that you can understand a personality, when they image something to you, that's what it means to that person, you're guessing. and I think it really gets confusing for contactees. For
More than that, too, Joe. I mean, from a lot of the cases I've heard, and maybe even some personal experience, it's not, the telepathic communication isn't so much of a, you know, shoot somebody an image from the saucer. It's, you know, you send them the, you know, basically the thoughts and emotions behind the cup and the saucer. I mean, there's definitely it's basically more a feeling, a more transfer of, you know, concept and idea than, you know, like, say, any kind of picture or anything like that. I don't know. Most people say it's rather hard to explain.
Well, it is. I mean, it's hard to put in words. It's going to always be hard to put in words because there's just so much there to try to get out of your head. I mean, there's what actually physically happened to you, which sometimes may be good, sometimes may be bad, may be just something that happened. So any of those scenarios. So you're dealing with that. You're dealing with seeing an alien craft. You're dealing with seeing extraterrestrials. You're dealing with seeing other humans, maybe even other races. And then you're dealing with an outright contact where an alien is speaking to you in your head. So you're like, oh, okay. And no, I don't think they speak English to send me that.
Well, hey there, Mythical Vision. She's actually, long time no see. She's asking, so how do we know what the greys and reptilians are actually up to here on Earth? Well, you know, when you get down to the, I mean, absolute truth of the matter, I'm not exactly sure why they're here on this Earth. The only conclusions I can really draw is they seem to take an interest, not in humanity as a whole, but they seem to take an interest in certain individuals here on this planet, visit them repeatedly over the course of their lives. I mean, for what reasons? I mean, all we can really do is speculate. I don't believe that they've ever truthfully told anybody exactly what the whole plot is, but maybe by talking to the people that they are taking some kind of interest in, we can sort of reverse engineer what they're trying to do. I mean, I can't tell you that, oh, they're here for our love, or, oh, they're here to, like, enslave us so we can mine their resources for them, or that we're some kind of genetic experiment. Who knows? Maybe we're like dogs to them. I mean, hell, we've manipulated dogs for time. I mean, we've breeded them for all different kinds of shapes, sizes, and purposes, you know, whatever basically fits our needs. Who's to say that they're not doing the same thing with us on some kind of macro scale?
Breeding a better pet. Uh-oh.
Or, if you're a fan of David Jacobs, it's all about the hybrid rape. Apparently.
Yeah. Well, you know, it always cracks me up when people tell me, oh, the Greys came here to steal our souls. Really, I don't think so. Oh, the Greys are using us to regrow themselves. Do you really think a Grey wants to look like us? That's just egotistical on humans' part. I mean, come on, let's be honest about it. That's pure ego on our part. Would you, if you were us, would you want to look like another race? I mean, really, think about this. I mean, if you were changing your species, you'd want to change it to look, I don't think so. I think you'd want to look like you. I mean, that's just a retarded thing. And I got to be honest, after 5 or 10 or 15,000 years, I think they could have got the hybrid they were looking for. They're up to something else. They're up to something much, much different and such much long term. And I got to be honest with people, since we're pretty sure they're not here to enlighten our species and they're not here to wipe out our species, then they're here for their own personal reasons, and we're part of their agenda. I don't even think we're all of their agenda. We're just part of it. Now, we may learn stuff. We may grow from it. We may get wiped out from it. Who knows? But humans need to stop putting their ego before their experience, and that's a big, big, big problem. It just is. I keep telling people, you can't think of an extraterrestrial in a human sense. They're not us.
You just got a good point there. I mean, you really can't just go off and judge and decide what the whole deal here is about and say, oh, well, they're obviously doing it for us. They're doing it for us somehow. Of course we'd make ourselves the center of attention and want to think it was for us, but I'd say the question that you had better ask isn't, what are they doing it for us? It's like, what are they doing it to us that they're getting something out of it for? I mean, that's what you really have to look at.
Yeah.
They're not telling me whatever the hell it is, so... Who knows?
They're, I'm not feeling the love, y'all. That's a thing. I'm not feeling the love. No. The thing about it is, guys, is they've got their agendas. We're part of their agenda. We're trying to understand why they're here, what they're doing here. And then there's a couple other things that's been bothering me. You know, y'all have heard me talk about, we think the reptilians were from Earth. They probably existed here for a long time. You know, there's the map of the Creator, which is a very interesting map. It's still up on the Pervada site. It's still in the museum. You can still check it out for yourself. It's all still available, and you can read it. It's supposed to be 120 million years old, and it's supposed to be an aerial resource map of a valley taken from an aerial shot. Now, there was no humans on a planet 120 million years ago. Now, while I'm talking about that, just recently, there's been something found that's been being found in coal. This is really weird. A couple of days ago, I was reading a Yahoo article, and this guy found a piece of aluminum, machined aluminum, inside a chunk of coal, you know, heating coal for his house. Inside the coal. The coal dates back between 300 and 500 million years ago, so I'm thinking, whoa, some kind of fluke. Come to find out, this isn't the first time. We have found machined aluminum and other pieces of coal around the world dating between 300 and 500 million years old. And just recently found in some limestone, we found some what looked like cogs of some kind and a vase that dates between 300 and 500 million years. Why doesn't mainstream just go floored with this? I don't even understand this. I mean, it's inside a block of coal.
What is a piece of aluminum doing in something that's 300 to 500 million years old? I mean, there was a piece of some aluminum machinery that was dropped, a billion years ago when this was some forest or peat moss bed or, on the bottom of the ocean floor or something like that. I mean, any piece of aluminum would have, basically oxidized and been, more or less absolutely nothing less than dust by this point. So you kind of have to wonder.
Yeah, it's a really strange thing, and matter of fact, the article's still probably up on Yahoo. Just type in aluminum and coal or something, and coal, and you can probably find it, but it's very interesting, and it's very strange because, there wasn't supposed to be nobody around making machine parts 400 million years ago. Now maybe, Starship said maybe somebody time traveled and dropped it in the past, maybe so, but it's been found in several locations. And, it's interesting because you heard me talking earlier in the show about going between the stars. Recently, science thinks that there's a part of the galaxy that is diddly to Earth. People forget that not only are we orbiting our sun, but our solar system is orbiting the core of our galaxy. And at different times, we're passing through different star clusters. Well, in a couple hundred million years, we're going to be passing through a cluster of pulsars and red giants. And they said when we pass through, it's going to irradiate the planet where no one can live. It just coincidentally happens to be between 300 and 500 million years, which is about the span of the last three great extinctions on planet Earth. Coincidence? I don't know.
That's basically because our orbit around the Milky Way galaxy, isn't, static on an up and down axis. I mean, it actually, bobs up and down also.
Yeah, it does. And I should have said it too, because you're traveling this big elliptic, you're going up and down. It's a very strange thing. There's a few maps out there NASA's put out, and NASA's even talked about these star systems. Nobody's in any big panic, because, we're talking 300 million years from now. But, it would explain a lot of our technology, would explain, and that would explain other stuff. It wouldn't be aliens coming from the future. It would be us coming from our colonies coming home. As far as we know, all three of those races may originally have been from here and just had to leave at different times. We just don't know. But it's a good chance the reptilians are from here because when you hear them talk about, when you hear the contactees talk about it and when you listen to them and realize that they're not actually cold-blooded, it gets kind of interesting. My dog's about to attack my son over here. What's up with that, man? He's going to attack him. He's growling. What you growling at Joey for? By the way, guys, I'm doing a show with a 4-pound chihuahua in my arms, and every now and then he looks over at my son and he like goes, I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
See, ICAR is a dog friendly organization because I've got the blue dealer right over there chilling on the bed.
I know we're going to bring on Christopher George in a little while to join us too, so he can promote Second Sight NYC and what he's going to be doing tomorrow night. I just wanted to mention that. Don't forget Perspective X following us. The girls are on Hot Topics right now. There's a bed of Hot Topics going on right now, and it ought to be a very interesting show. But the hosts are Jill Marie Morris and Stephanie Bonetti, and they'll be following us on Perspective X. At the top of the hour, they'll be coming into the show. And I think they're doing abortion tonight. So, these are tough topics, man. The network lately has been taking on a lot of tough topics, not just in the paranormal world, but in the everyday world, which is a scary thing, man. I'd rather talk to E.T. anytime. I've got to be honest with y'all. E.T. does not scare me as much as our fellow politicians and religious leaders do. I don't know. They're kind of scaring me. We had a guy write in from Italy. Ron, what's his name? Paul Ron, I'm sorry. And said the Pope stepped down because the reptilians told him he had to. Well, I guess it's a good excuse as any other. I really don't know.
I don't know. I think it's a little bit more probable that the Pope is stepping down, you know, just to sort of coincide with sweeping another little, you know, let's rape some little boys scandal.
Yeah, I know. It does seem to be being prominent in the church.
I mean, in the realm of probability, that's a hell of a lot more likely than reptilians.
Probably is a little more like, well, maybe it's a gay reptilian. Ah, see, I didn't know. I don't know if there's such a thing. Wait, I better watch it. You know, that's an interesting thing. I've never heard anyone ever talk about a gay extraterrestrial. Huh. Guys, I have no idea before you even write to me. I don't know. It just popped in my head for some reason. Maybe because of other topic matter. As far as I know, to answer that question that just came in, yes, there are gay people abducted. Before you even go any further, yes, they do. Gay people get abducted. Policemen get abducted. Bisexual people get abducted. People that practice BSN get abducted. Child molesters probably get abducted if it's in their family line. And so, I think, you know.
But I've never heard of any actual, like, homosexual
encounters.
You know, I mean, nobody's ever reported, like, seeing a giant pink triangle floating over them, and then they were aboard an immaculately decorated ship, you know?
Well, there's some peyote trips I've heard about, but that don't count. some of those desert trips out there having a little peyote in the evening, but hey, who knows? No, it is interesting because it's hard for people because, you know, it's always, people always want to, you know, put us on the extraterrestrials, our views, our way we understand things, and you can't do it. They're not like us. Think of this. Here's an easy thing for y'all, okay? Let's say that we're going to break out the guns. Me and Jason's going to go back in time travel. We're going to break out a couple of AK-47s, a couple of grenade launches, and we're going to travel back to the Civil War, and we're going to fight for the South what was the one? What was the big one? Gettysburg. And who do you think is going to win? Really? Who do you think is going to win? We're going to mow them rebels down, I mean, them Union soldiers down like they ain't shit. They ain't even know what to hit them with their little flintlocks. By the time
It wouldn't even take, like, that, you know, impressive weaponry, dude. I mean, if I just went back with a 30-06, I mean, General Sherman's not expecting to get his head popped off his shoulders at 800 yards. That's impossible.
That's right. It's impossible. They don't even know what would hit them, okay? So now let's imagine that Jason and I are from the year 3000, and we travel back to now. Okay, laser gun versus pistol. I don't know. I think we're going to lose. But the point being is, these aliens are on tens of thousands of years more advanced than we are. Their understanding of the universe, the cosmos, and the spiritual being is probably at a level that we will not understand for a very, very long time to come. So I find it very arrogant and very presumptuous of humans to make themselves part of this. I always would tell me, the alien can't function without my spirit. Really? Get the out of here. Come on. Did you just tell me that? It's hard on me when people tell me this stuff because this is making yourself more important than them. You're making yourself more important than anybody, for that matter. You're the new Billy Myers. You're the prophet of God and the extraterrestrials. Come on, people. Stop smoking whatever it is you're smoking.
Well, there are a lot of weird theories out there like, well, they're here because they're addicted to our emotions, and some ETs, the good ones, love our positive emotions, and the negative ones feed off of our fear and hatred and anger and jealousy. And it's like, you know, that's one hell of a way for, you know, an advanced extraterrestrial being to sustain itself, is off basically the emotions of these little monkeys that think they're smarter than everything else on their planet. It's like, come on. You think it's really like that? Really?
I know. It's just kind of funny. Oh, people. Actually, we do still take...
Look. If aliens fed off of emotions, they would just get dogs. I mean, then they would feel like great, awesome, happy emotions around them all the time.
That's right. It amazes me. And what's funny is about one out of every three abductees or contactees I've talked to, the ET world revolves around them. Sorry. It's not happening. these races, most of these races, don't even think of us as a significant part of the universe yet. So they're not going to revolve around us. That's a human ego-driven thing. That's a thing that makes you want to feel self-important because you have no control of what's happening to you, which I do understand, but it's not the truth.
Especially when you have somebody in, you know, their history and their story, when they start off saying that, you know, they're basically along the lines of some fallen extraterrestrial prince of some great alien lineage, and, you know, that their presence or that their child that they're going to have or something like that's going to be like the great future leader, like it's John Connor or some shit like that.
Yeah. You know, I see...
I'd say that's probably a fantasy somebody has cooked up in their head. There's a possibility that I could be wrong and they could be right, but I really doubt it.
You know, I want to address what LS1212 said in the Virtual Auditorium. It says, I used to feel like they sucked you out your emotions. But you see, that's true, LS. They weren't like... People used to always want to make them like vampires or wraiths or something like that. It's more like, you know how when you have a good fight with somebody, you're zapped, your emotions are zapped afterwards? It's kind of like that, but on top of that, especially the Greys, have the ability to, I don't want to say suppress emotions. It would be like, it kind of lets them flow through them. So your emotions are just kind of like drawn out of you, drawn through them, and then you're just kind of left like, in a way they are sucking your emotions up, but they're not sucking it out to feed on. They're because they're telepathic. They don't want to have to deal with your emotions, so they just kind of mute them. It's hard to explain. It's like they just turn them off. Not even really turn them off. It's like they dull them down. How's that? It's more like that. They have a much greater control over their emotions. Now, I don't think they totally block them, because I have. See, I've heard a lot of people talk about Graves getting mad or even getting a little funny sometimes. So it's not that they're completely blocking them, but somehow they have the ability to kind of draw out of you and just play them down. It's the only way I can really explain it. I don't know how else to explain it. It's one of those things, but it's not like they're feeding off your emotions. That's not what they're doing. They're just dulling them down so they can do what they got to do. Because remember, they're extremely telepathic. They sense everything you're doing. And they may have a hard time blocking a good telepath. You know, you're projecting, especially a telepath that don't know that's projecting all the time. You know, they're like, what the hell? Tell these humans how to turn this crap off. Sorry. But I know we're getting close. I'm going to bring Chris on with us here in a second. Let him come hang out with us. Guys and girls, I know I got a couple other questions we'll try to get to in a minute, but, you know, Perspective X is going to be following us in a few minutes. They'll be on. We were going to bring Joe back on, and Jason and I got to talking, so we'll, in the future we'll bring him back on and chat with y'all. Besides, he's drinking beer, the dirty bastard.
Dirty bastard.
Hey, I want a beer, man, especially if it's one of them red ones.
Come on down, dude. I got Shiners, but I think you'll like those, too.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What were we drinking with Glenn that night?
Yeah, that's what we were drinking.
Well, that good beer. I like that beer. What the hell are you talking about? Maybe, why was I thinking it was red?
Maybe
because it was dark outside.
We had good old regular Shiners in a yellow bottle, and we had the Ruby Redbird flavor that was there, too.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Maybe that was what.
No, that was kind of nice. A nice little summer beer with a, you know, sort of a little grapefruit hint to it. Yeah. Actually, it works a whole bit lot better than it sounds.
It's a decent little beer. I'm not a big beer drinker anymore, but it's a decent little beer. I enjoyed it. We're just hitting out, hanging out, chit-chatting in Glen Rose, Texas at the...
Well, actually, there's a funny little story that involves beer. You know, after we were done taping over at basically the campfire that they had out there at Glen Rose, where they'd actually seen the Stephenville UFO from, and it was, like you said, it was really nice having, like, two of the witnesses basically explain it and what it looked like and went into really good detail standing at the same spot that they saw it from. That really helped my understanding of the case a lot. But, you know, that goes on for a little while. And, you know, we're getting kind of thirsty. And I notice there's a beer cooler over there. Joe comes over. He's like, "And you got anything to drink?" I'm like, "No, dude, but there's a cooler right over there." And he's like, "All right." So he sneaks over there to raid the cooler while everybody's, like, hanging around the campfire and talking. It just so happens that there was a complete and total silence around the campfire. Joe goes to open the cooler, and it's loud. It's all like... He's trying to sneak into the cooler. everybody turns around and looks. You know, there are people shining their flashlights coming over there like, well, here, let me hold my light so you can see it. Well, that one didn't go too well. Ended up okay, though.
Yeah, that was a weird night. Oh, he's talking about the other Joe, by the way, not me, guys. But it was funny as hell. It was a good night. It was a lot of fun. It was nice out. The weather was nice. It was weird because you could see a lightning storm off in the distance. No UFOs showed up, so as far as I know. We got some weird tape. I don't know. We got some weird anomalies on the tape, but that don't mean anything. We got.
There were a couple of points where everybody thought that they had seen some kind of UFO, and somebody would be like, "Oh my God, what was that?" And everybody would like look up and go, "At absolutely nothing." I mean, God, there were a number of people out there that wanted to see a UFO, and I mean, this is what it felt like. It was out there in the country in the middle of the night. You know, I'm used to this. That's what I've basically grown up around. But all of these weird folk that, you know, went out there for this UFO conference, it was like an entirely different world to them when at any given moment, you know, the mothership could decloak right there and they were expecting
it. I know, huh? It was an interesting night. I had a good time. The conference was a lot of fun. Sally, I don't think I'm going to the one in Miami this year or wherever it is in Florida this year. There's a women's symposium in Florida. There's a couple good speakers. I know Karen's going to be there. Richard's going to be there. Peter's going to be there. The Romanaks are going to be there. Paula Harris will be there. I think Kathleen Maldon will be there. No, they don't want me to come because Kathleen's going to be there, yeah. And they're scared I'll be mean to Kathleen. I'd never be mean to Kathleen. I'm always nice. I don't agree with they're taking the Betty and Barney Hill case by any means, but I would never be rude. That's not my style. I'd rather debate you in a public forum. Maybe that's what they're scared I'll do. I didn't think about that. Anyway,
man, you and that Betty and Barney Hill thing, man.
I had to rewrite it. It was wrong. When it's wrong, you got to correct it. We correct our stuff all the time, don't we? It was wrong. It needed to be corrected. And these days, ufology is on my side.
Between that and reptilians and Hurricane Katrina, I mean, man, you're kind of like a two-trick pony.
Yeah, I know. We got to add a few more to that. But we got a few more to add in there in upcoming times. We got a lot of good stuff we're working on that'll be coming out, and
I know it is kind of weird in this field. I mean, you get noticed for one thing, you know, basically that defines a lot of people's ideas of you.
Yeah, God,
I'm glad I'm not that big and not that noticed out there in the field.
Well, fortunately,
oh, man, they take one thing, one asshole thing that I'd said, and it would haunt me for the rest of my life.
Fortunately for me, I got iCar, which gives me a whole another wealth of information that helps me out. But it comes in handy that way. Hey, Chris, you with us?
Yeah, I am. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, man, what you up to?
Not much, just preparing for the show for tomorrow night.
Yep, Chris, Jason, Chris, I know you have talked.
Hey, what's up, Chris?
How you doing, Jason? What's going on?
Oh, man, actually, I came across something on Facebook the other day that I thought would make a good Church of Second Sight rant, man. And let me
What is it?
It'll be brief. All right. Church of Second Sight's out here. All right, I'm on Facebook. I see one guy post this article. I'm like, I see another person, and I had it by the time I saw a third person. And it was this channeled message where somebody claimed that they were a medium, and hey, Chris, you know what that's like, and it's nothing like this crap.
Right.
But this guy, basically, his site's called Jesus Through John, and some dude that named John that looks like a retired engineer or mechanic or some crap like that claims that he is channeling messages from Jesus to himself to all of his good followers on Earth. And you know what, man? It was that same crap that you hear from all these New Agey channelers that, you know, we're the guys, you know, keep your chin up, your perception can bring down the corporate monopolies and all that, you know, New Agey good-sounding crap like that. And, man, honestly, it just came to me as... I don't consider myself a Christian by any means, all right? But I actually felt I had to stand up for Jesus on that one, and I'm sorry, but basically that was an insult to both my intelligence and Jesus. You know,
well, I'll tell you what, that's going to be my Church's Second Sight tomorrow. I'm going to go off on fake psychics and bullshit mediums and everybody who says that they can channel who that really can't do it and, you know, just taking people's money. That's going to be my church tomorrow. You just inspired me.
You would feel that one. If there was anybody out there that knew where I was coming from, it had to be you.
Well, you're damn straight, and you know what? I'm going to call them all out tomorrow. I'm on it.
Word.
Give him hell. Give him hell. Let him. I'll let you plug the show because I know we're getting close, and the girls will be shooting mean stuff at us here in a minute.
Yeah, we don't want to get shot by the girls. But tomorrow night I have on Joyce Keller, who is a world famous psychic. She has 7 books out. She's in the book Top 100 Psychics in America. She's been on Oprah Winfrey. She's been on Regis over 40 times. She's been, I mean, on every top show, Entertainment Tonight, every top show out there, she's been on. She's been on The View. She is a personal friend of mine. And I know stories nobody knows, and I'm going to get her to say them on the air tomorrow night. I'm going to get her to talk about stars that she's read, because she is the psychic of the stars, especially, you know, some of the older stars and, you know, celebrities and whatnot, and I'm going to get her to dish some dirt tomorrow night, and she has no idea what she's in for.
Oh, excellent. Sounds
really,
fun,
man? She's actually been on The View, huh?
She's been on The View, yeah. Oh, yeah, she can't stand them at all. They tried to make
her... Oh, man, dance. Oh, dude, you got to ask her if Barbara Walters is as much of a bitch as she comes off across on.
Well, I know what, I will ask her that, and I'll tell you another thing. You know the amazing Randy who has that challenge for $1 million and everything?
Yeah.
She actually took the challenge, she beat him, and he never paid her. And I'll get her to talk about that, too.
Man, if you've ever looked at the Amazing Randy's challenge, dude, it's obviously that he had at least a pre-law student writer. I mean, the way it's worded, he leaves himself so many caveats and ways out that it's not even funny.
Well, apparently she beat him, and she did it on, I forget, well, maybe Sally Jesse Raphael back in the day, and...
When daytime TV was still interesting.
That's right. She's been on Donahue. I actually think it happened. It didn't happen on Donahue or Sally Jesse. I think it was Donahue. And she did what she had to do. And then, of course, he had some kind of loophole where she didn't win it. But I'll get her to talk about it tomorrow. She has no problem talking about anything I want to say. Trust me.
Donahue's
pretty
old school, too.
Well, so is this. So is Joyce Keller. She says it like it comes to her. She's a lot like me. Well, I should say I'm a lot like her in that aspect, where she has very little filter, and it should be an interesting show.
Sounds good. I can't wait, guys. That's Second Sight NYC tomorrow night, 7 to 9 Central Time, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. What is that? 5 to 7 Pacific Time. So come on, hang out. It'll be live as usual. You can come check out. The call-in numbers are always going to be the same, 504-273-7379. You can check it out. If Chris will yell, harass him or something, he don't mind. He's like me. He don't care if you harass him.
Yeah, I can kill us.
You know, just don't get rude, because we can all be asses. So.
Yeah, I saw on the comments on the website that somebody said I was rude to our guest last week because I was laughing, but... Hey, I thought the guest sucked. What do you want me to do? He wouldn't let us get a word in, so at the end of the show, I left.
Yeah, I meant to tell you that was up there. I forgot. I was going to tell you that.
Oh, I seen it. I'm actually going to bring it up tomorrow. You know, I'm not going to just read the good stuff. I'll read that, too. You know, he basically said that me and Victor were basically asses for giggling at our guest. But if anybody listened to that show this week, we tried so hard to get a word in, and we just couldn't do it. I asked him how UFOs fly, and he started going into string theory. I mean, are you kidding me? And he didn't answer the question. And hey, it is what it is.
Well, you know, man, I actually found that show pretty interesting, and I mean, I was kind of like crapping on it in text a little bit, but I swear, dude, the night before, I would explain that very same stuff to somebody that had no clue about any of it whatsoever, and it was a challenge.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason. How about we'll interview you the next time, and you can come on and do his show. Maybe it'll be a little more interesting.
Here's the thing with me, man. I'll keep it real with you, Chris. I mean, I
know you will.
I'll wait to it and forget what I was talking about and then just make up whatever sounded good.
We let y'all two get together. We'll have to go off the FM that night for sure. Oh, my God. I'm surprised we didn't have to tonight. I didn't see no flags in the service tonight, so that's good. Now, a little thing, they sent an update for the beeper thing. So now when it gives a blip, it gives me a little thing that says, you have broke the FCC violations and you have been bleeped. Actually, I'm not going to say what it actually says.
Well, you know, here's another thing about the whole UFO technology thing. I mean, if you took, even if you had, like, a working UFO, I mean, you could probably give it to Einstein, Stephen Hawking, and, Carl Sagan. Let's throw him in there, too, just for shits and giggles. But you could give the UFO to those three guys, and it would probably take them a decade before they would feel confident enough to be able to operate the thing or replicate what it does. I mean, so how the hell can some guy out there just know all the secrets of it?
Yeah, but I mean, who is it? Michio Kaku, who's alive. Let's see, we got Stephen Hawkins. We've got Neil deGrasse Tyson. We've got a couple of the Russian scientists.
It's a scientist team. You can pick dead ones.
Okay, but still, I mean, if you took the top 10, we'll say, if you took the top 10 most brilliant scientists alive today and put them together, I bet you'd still take 100 years to get the damn thing flying. I really think that's what Roswell was. I think we were trying to learn how to fly, and the Grace said, well, look, let me show you. Plug in like this. Well, okay, you got it. Oh, shit. And then they hit the ground.
Well, no, my guest basically in his book said that we have this technology and we know how to do it, but who the hell got the answer out of him? Because he wouldn't answer the question. So, I mean, I didn't know what else to do, so we got rid of him.
Y'all got to stop IM me, stuff like that. Anyway, we're going to get out of here, guys, because I know it's after 9, and the ladies will be joining us next. Stephanie Bonetti and Jill Marie Morris will be joining us on Perspective X in about 5 minutes, maybe 8 minutes. They'll be on. I'm looking forward to the topic tonight. I may have to call in and harass them. And, guys, be free to – I know I've seen a couple people call in tonight, but I was kind of preoccupied with some other stuff. Don't get discouraged. I mean, I know my show is a little hard to get in on sometimes because, you know, between whatever guests we may have on, we usually got quite a bit of talking going on, and we do have – you know, the virtual auditorium is always rolling. There's always questions from the virtual auditorium. There's always emails and there's always instant messages. So if we're on a particular subject matter, it's hard to get in on a phone line sometimes. But, hey, you should always call because, you know, some days we do take them. Like last week we were taking calls. Week before we took some. And some weeks we don't. It's just how it is, guys. It's nothing personal. It's not like Kevin. You know, a lot of the other shows always – and in the old days, I'll be frank with y'all. And this is what happened because I'm going to get out of here in just a second. On Wake Up USA, we used to guarantee 10 calls a night we would take all the time. Well, we found out that we spent 60, 70 minutes of the show answering phone calls, and which was cool, but we weren't really assimilating the information we wanted to. We weren't getting the data that we wanted to get out.
And, you know, an honest thing about it is, you know, some questions you can't give a nice little rounded off 5 to 7 minute answer to either.
Yeah, you can. There's some questions that you ask that are going to take, you know, 20. I've actually seen Stanton Friedman go 30 minutes without a breath. I'm not kidding. I mean, people make fun, but I used to. Sometimes I'd get up, make a cup of coffee, get a sandwich. I'm listening via the radio, you know, and I'm just waiting, you know, because my headset's right there if I got to pick it up.
What's up with Stanton, man? I haven't heard very much out of him lately. I mean,
I had Linda write to him. I don't know if he's written back or not. I don't think he has written back yet, but I know we put a request in for him because I haven't talked to him in about a year and a half. So we'll try to get him on a show sometime in the next few months.
I haven't seen him in anything lately, man.
Well, it's been worrying me. Yeah, it's been worrying me. That's why I asked Linda to get him, because it's been worrying me. I haven't heard anybody talking about it.
I mean, Stan's basically one of the founding fathers of, you know, modern ufology.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's one of the few ufologists I have respect.
Adam Jefferson.
Yeah, he's one of the very few ufologists that I actually have respect for. Because a lot of the ufologists out there, guys, remember, to me, ufology is a different field than what Jason. We're in the abduction field. We're in abduction research. Ufology is the study of UFOs and the conspiracies that go along with them. We're in a whole different field. And it's not UFOs and ETs and stuff like that. It's just we just don't want to get involved with that. But anyway, guys and girls, we got to get out of here tonight. We got to go. We're already 4 minutes into their time. They're going to be running late tonight because the show is definitely going to – well, I already told them they could run late tonight because the topic matter they're on is going to run past an hour. There's just no way to get it into an hour. Anyway, on that note, Chris, thanks for calling in tonight. You look forward to tomorrow night's show. It sounds like it's going to be a world of fun, guys. Second Sight, 7 to 9. Y'all come check out Christopher Knight. He's solo tomorrow night. I think Victor's out of town, right?
Yeah, but I have a guest co-host tomorrow night, so it'll be fun.
So I got a guest co-host. That's cool. Jason, we just drag Jason in anytime we get. AS was supposed to be with us tonight, but she has to work tomorrow, and it is a big difference in time. It's, 2 a.m. there right now, 3 a.m. there right now. So it's a big time difference. So anyway, we'll get her back on.
I think she tried to call me earlier, but it just wouldn't connect. And Delphine, if you tried to give me a call, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was you.
Yeah, anyway, y'all will check out that. We're going to get out of here now, guys and girls. Stephanie, Jill, I'll be calling y'all in just a few minutes. Guys, have some fun. Enjoy life. At least try to smile every once in a while. Good night, everybody.